The gun control debate is getting more mainstream every day. President Obama seemed to put it near the top of his agenda yesterday, something unthinkable a week ago. He cited public opinion. Listen.
A majority of Americans support banning the sale of military-style assault weapons. A majority of Americans support banning the sale of high-capacity ammunition clips. A majority of Americans support laws requiring background checks before all gun purchases so that criminals can't take advantage of legal loopholes to buy a gun from somebody who won't take the responsibility of doing a background check at all.
President Obama yesterday. Also, Syracuse University basketball coach Jim Boeheim, not known to be a political crusader, used his big media moment from his 900th career win to rail against assault weapons. Listen.
I mean, if we in this country as Americans cannot get the people that represent us to do something about firearms, we are a sad, sad society. I'm not talking, I'm a hunter, I've hunted, I'm not talking about rifles, and that's fine. If one person in this world, NRA president, anybody, can tell me why we need assault weapons with 30 shots in the thing.
But if Obama is right, inciting a majority in public opinion, it is not universal. In a Connecticut versus Texas moment, Texas Governor Rick Perry repeated his call for more guns in schools if that's what the local district wants.
In the state of Texas, with our concealed handgun license, if you go through the process and you have been duly backgrounded and trained and you are a concealed handgun license carrying individual, you should be able to carry your handgun anywhere in this state.
Governor Rick Perry to an enthusiastic crowd, but then came a response from Connecticut Congressman Jim Himes, a Democrat whose district is right next to Newtown. He lashed out in response. He said, citing a study by the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, a gun in the home is 22 times more likely to be used in a suicide or a murder than it is to be used in self-defense. So the notion that more Americans, in the words of Governor Perry, packing heat, he said, will make us safer is not founded in reality, facts, or history. It is founded in the fantasy of testosterone-laden individuals who have blood on their hands for articulating that idea, unquote, from Connecticut Congressman Jim Himes. So a dead issue in American politics is revived as a result of the Newtown massacre. And we will begin this hour with how this is playing outside the New York area. I am delighted to have with us now Richard Dunham, who's the Washington correspondent for the Houston Chronicle and the Hearst newspaper chain. Richard, hello from New York. Hello from WNYC. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you, Brian. And it really is interesting with the Hearst newspaper chain because we own the Connecticut papers right in that area from Danbury and Newtown. Huh. And we also own papers in the biggest Second Amendment state in the country with Houston, San Antonio, and four others in Texas.
So do you see it from that perch as kind of a Northeast versus South and Southwest culture clash?
I see it as a culture chasm. And part of it is personal for me because I grew up in Philadelphia, and when I remember growing up, the only relationship I had to guns were the husband of my fifth grade teacher was killed in a robbery, and the little brother of one of my classmates was killed in playing with guns in the home. Huh. And so death and crime were it for me. But then my wife is from rural Texas, and for her, guns were a family and a recreational activity. And so just culturally, the way we respond to guns is different. And I use that as an example writ large when it comes to just the way people from the Northeast think of guns and people from Texas and the West think of guns. But then you have political layers on top of it all.
Well, give me a little Texas context here, because I'm sure a lot of our New York area listeners were gasping hearing that clip of Governor Perry. But Is Perry's position popular in Texas itself, or is it divisive even there?
Perry's position, it's both. It's divisive and it's popular. You have to think a couple of things of Texas. One is you have what I would call the old Texas and the new Texas. You have a state that is majority minority, but you also have a state that's dominated by Anglo-conservatives politically because they have the voting majority. So I think it's a state in transition where cities and suburban areas are becoming more important, but it's still dominated politically by the rural, and Rick Perry is rural West Texas. And what he said, I think if you polled Texas, you probably would get a majority of people would agree with him, but you have a number who strongly disagree with him, particularly from the urban areas.
Anyone want to call in on this? Anyone who has a connection, though you may be in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, to people in other areas? And, of course, even within our listening area, you know, it's different in Brooklyn than it is in, well, Newtown itself, historically. So if you see this as kind of a culture clash, or if you yourself are changing on this topic from where you were even a week ago, as perhaps some people are, as the polls seem to reflect, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, as we continue with Richard Dunham, Washington correspondent for the Houston Chronicle and the Hearst newspaper chain, 212-433-9692. I wonder what you thought about Jim Boeheim coming out. Of course, Syracuse is also in the Northeast, but his remarks yesterday going to a national college basketball audience, which would be a lot of people in Texas, a lot of people in Kentucky, a lot of people in Indiana, all those, you know, mega college basketball places, is another sign to me that this is becoming a different kind of populist issue right now, breaking out of the Beltway and the activist crowd in an emotional way. How did you hear that?
I agree with you completely, and it resonated more for me because my niece is a freshman at Syracuse this year. Huh. So I'm particularly sensitive to anything having to do with Syracuse
the
this year.
Man.
And I had never thought of Jim Boeheim as a political person. I mean, unlike Dean Smith, who was so well respected at North Carolina, but he was known as a Democrat, and so it wasn't surprising when he weighed in. Jim Boeheim just does not have a reputation for being political, and he was just so to the point. I mean, he wasn't a demagogue. He just seemed like a person who was speaking with common sense. I'm not saying that it's the only legitimate position, but he stated it so succinctly and so powerfully.
Let's take a call. Danny in Massapequa, you're on the air. Hiya, Danny.
Hey, good morning. How's everything? I wish we could talk on a happier subject.
Yes, and Danny, you know what? Before you even get into guns, I've been thinking about you as one of our regular callers, and this is the first time that I think I've heard from you since Sandy. And being in Massapequa, I've been wondering, you okay? Was your house okay?
My house is fine. A part of the roof has disappeared, but it still hasn't been fixed yet. But, I mean, considering my brother lives in Long Beach, there's a lot of people a lot worse off than I was. And my school district was out for 7 days, so...
I
can't complain about Sandy.
All right. So go ahead.
Obviously, having spent my life in law enforcement and now in charge of security at one of Long Island's largest school districts, high schools, I have much to say. There's so many layers to this onion. I would like to start by saying the statistic that the congressman from Connecticut quoted was guns in the house. He didn't mention guns in the street. And in 20 years in New York City Police Department, I was never involved in an incident where someone with a licensed handgun in the street had not acted properly and had not defended themselves in a crime situation. I never had a licensed handgun person commit a crime on the street in the city. Now, as far as the schools are concerned, I believe that this has to be taken with many, many angles. I am completely against anything of a large banana clip. I don't know why you need that. Assault weapons should be banned. These are military-type bullets. The rounds are deadly. They're jacketed. The guns have high capacity. There's no place for them in the hands of any civilian for a lawful purpose. I'd also like to say that I know that the civil rights people are going to bite back on this mental health issue, but in the city of New York and in Nassau County, if you are the target of an allegation of domestic violence in your house, you don't have to be arrested. You don't have to be anything. Your license to carry is seized. Mm. You are not allowed to have a gun. The same thing should be done if you have someone living in your house who has a mental illness. I know people don't want to hear that, but it's the truth. If I'm in a domestic situation and I might be more prone to violence, that's why they seize my gun. The same thing should happen with mental illness. If you have someone on medication, this boy was clearly troubled. Clearly, should have been no weapons in that house, and we wouldn't even be discussing that today.
And what about in the schools? Since you're director of security for a school district, would you feel that the kids were safer or more prone to that kind of in-the-house sort of accident if teachers, principals, others were allowed to be armed at work?
If I was to stand at the front door of the high school all day, I could assure the citizens of my town that nothing evil would enter through the front door while I was standing there. However, there are no less than 50 doors and 17 different angles on this building. Absent a squad of Marines on every school prop, what happens when they go out to recess? Do I ring the playground with a bunch of soldiers? It would be impossible to protect these kids as we want to. Now, does that mean that, I'll give you an example. Now, I know that for a fact that the shooter in Colorado, there was four or five theaters playing that night, and licensed pistol holders were allowed to bring their weapons into seven out of the eight midnight movie theaters showing that movie, Batman. The only one where they weren't allowed to bring their weapons, because it's private property, was the theater he went to. He wanted to kill a lot of people, but he did not want to die. He gave up peacefully when he ran out of bullets.
I actually never heard that fact before.
That is an actual fact, because that killer is not dead. He's being continually interviewed. He did his legwork. If you remember, he knew how to get in the back door. He knew how to pry open the door.
Right.
He knew there wouldn't be a licensed handgun person in that building. He did not want to die. He just wanted to kill people. Had this kid known there was a licensed handgun at that school, quite possibly he would have went to a harder target, if you want to call it that.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the answer is. It couldn't hurt, but it's not going to be the end all to put an armed guard in every school.
Danny, I appreciate your call. And again, since we hadn't heard from you before, Sandy from Massapequa, I was a little worried about you. So I'm glad you checked in. Well, Mr. Dunham from the Houston Chronicle and Hearst newspapers, that's quite a call, you know, from one of our listeners who supports Republican and conservative candidates and causes frequently and has that, you know, fairly nuanced take on the role of guns and when it's good and when it won't do much.
Well, I think it underlines one thing that's a big divide in the debate and other things where there could be common ground. All right, some of the discussions that we had of mental health issues, I think you could find some common ground between gun rights supporters and gun control advocates. Where he's on the other side is the idea of arming people undercover in schools and in other places that are gun-free zones. I just think right now that was the immediate reaction of a lot of the pro-gun people in Texas. If only the principal had had a machine gun, or if only the principal had had weapons, or if there had been armed guards in the school. And I just don't think that that's going to go anywhere. And I think if the NRA uses that as its main talking point when it has a press conference tomorrow, it's just going to lead to a divide. But I do see some common ground. And I mean, that caller is one of the people who would be very important in the debate if you're going to try to find any kind of common ground to get something actually passed.
Let's take another call. Jim in Monroe, Connecticut. Jim, thank you very much for calling in.
Hi, there, it's Tim.
Oh, Tim, I'm sorry. And am I right that Monroe is where the children from Sandy Hook Elementary School are now going to go?
Yes, we're 7 miles from the school.
Well, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
No problem. First to say, my heart goes out to the families, and just want to shout out that basically the media needs to leave. That's one of the biggest problems we're having in this area. And I called to make the point that there's a really large amount of ignorance about weapons in the Northeast. I'm from the Northeast, raised in Connecticut, but I'm in the military. And, you know, there's people ask you questions about weapons, and there's such a lack of knowledge, even simple terminology. But another thing I wanted to bring up was that if they ban all these weapons, it's just going to create a secondary market. A lot of people they're not mentioning is that when they had these firearms weapons bans, assault weapons bans, all the magazines that were created were grandfathered in, and the prices just doubled. So they're just creating another market, and it's not going to go away. All these weapons, you can't unmake these weapons. The prices are going to double, and it's going to be a secondary market. That's just all I want to say.
Jim, I appreciate your call. I appreciate your heart going out to the victims, as, of course, all of ours do. And believe me, I'm sympathetic with your point about the media becoming a burden on those families at this point. You know, Richard Dunham, relevant to his call, you know what one of my biggest fears is?
That
Congress will do something about assault weapons. It'll be all the political capital anyone can spend on this issue. And it won't make a bit of difference in the death by gunfire rates, not only because of the secondary market that he referred to, but because these assault weapons massacres, horrible as they are still extremely rare events. While most of the 30,000 Americans a year who die from gunfire are shot by a regular old handgun. You have any thought about that possibility?
Well, it is true, but I do think that the question of gun legislation is going to be about bigger issues, about things like the 30-round clips. It's going to be, I hate to put it this way, it may be more feel good to make people feel that they're trying to do something. And yes, there always will be ways around any law. There will be secondary markets. There will be black markets. That's why we call the gun show loophole a loophole, because it was a way around the background checks. And so that will happen. But I think back to what we now call homeland security. And we had one person on a plane who tried to light his shoe on fire, and every person in the United States and in most of the world now has to take shoes off to get on planes. And so has that prevented a terrorist attack? You can debate that. Will terrorists try something else? You can debate that too.
The president put Joe Biden in charge of this task force. Does that signal where they're going to come out?
Biden. I don't know if you remember, I've covered Congress for a long time, and I remember when the first debate during the Clinton administration over the assault weapons ban was going on, Joe Biden brought one of these military-style weapons into the Senate Judiciary Committee and was waving it around. And so he was one of the leaders for the assault weapons ban. We know where Joe Biden stands. He was outspoken when he was running for president, far more outspoken than Barack Obama was in the 2008 primaries. So, yes, I think we know exactly. We could predict the legislative agenda out of it, I think, six or eight things.
Well, and the president basically laid out the three things in his appearance yesterday announcing the task force: a ban on assault weapons, however that's defined, a ban on these extended round clips or magazines, and closing the gun show and other loopholes. Are there other big things you expect?
I would think that they will announce that they're stepping up gun prosecutions within the administration, that it will be a higher priority. I think that they probably will push to make gun trafficking a felony. And I'm trying to think off the top of my head. There are a couple of others that
let me toss another one in here, because the president also said yesterday that mental health services need to be as easy to get as a gun. But I'm curious what kinds of policy proposals might come on that, because Obamacare already includes new mental health access provisions, and Congress passed that law back in 2008 that guarantees parity in health insurance plans between physical health and mental health benefits. So what would be the next policy step the president might call for? Any idea?
That's one where I don't see what a legislative solution is other than weighing into some of these privacy issues and adjudications of mental illness. I do think that is the one area that probably does need some study, so that we try, rather than have a reflexive action, to do something that the most people think would be helpful. I do think that you need, I mean, maybe just even shedding light on the issue of mental illness and guns, like the First Lady has done with obesity. Maybe just making it a major issue could help the situation. But legislation, I find, is much more problematic.
One more call. Bruce in Fresh Meadows, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I told your person that I found out yesterday that my nephew living in Georgia, who recently came out of the Israeli army. He actually got into it, even though he's not Israeli, but he wants to bring a handgun up for the vacation get-together we have in Valley Stream, New York. And he hasn't told my brother yet who is going to be hosting it and where he'll be staying. But
did he say why he wants to bring a gun to Christmas?
I think because he lives in Georgia where he can carry it. I don't know whether he feels he's making a statement, because supposedly he's been talking about this on Facebook, that if the, like what you were talking about, the teachers had been armed. They could have taken out the gun person, but I don't know. And it's, I know he's brought knives up before, but...
So what's the nature of the family conversation? Is it, are you going to let him bring it into the house? Are you going to let him show your kids? Is it that kind of thing?
Well, I told my my sister, who's supposed to, who just got this advanced information, that I would probably not come to make my statement. My girlfriend, who would be there, basically said the same thing. I still don't know what my brother, who's hosting everything and will be their host while they sleep over, I don't know what he's going to, how he's going to react.
Bruce, thank you for your call. All right, listeners, let's advise Bruce and his brother on our comments page. What should he do about his nephew who wants to bring a gun to their holiday party? We don't have time for calls on this, but do this on our comments page. Maybe you can say, hey, you know, there's no danger here. He seems like somebody got out of the army, law-abiding citizen, Israeli army, on first impression. Let him bring it. This is who he is. Or maybe you take a stand like Bruce and you don't show up yourself. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show to get that conversation going. Have you ever had a dilemma like that yourself, being from that kind of mixed region family you were telling us about, Richard, with you from Philadelphia and your wife from Texas?
Right. I've never had an issue with concealed weapons. I have had an issue even when we got married in 1986, and that there were big rifles over the fireplace at the home in my wife's hometown that was hosting our party, and it just seemed a little strange to me, but it really wasn't a question of debate. I think I would be a lot more uncomfortable if there were people with concealed weapons around. But I mean, that caller brought up a legal issue, which is that if you have a concealed weapons permit in Texas or in Georgia, that doesn't mean you can bring it to every state. One of the priorities of gun rights supporters has been to allow you, if you have a concealed permit, to bring it to any of the other states. This is an issue that probably would go to the Supreme Court if it was passed in Congress. I think that probably that kind of legislation would not go anywhere now. But that was one of the things that gun rights supporters were pushing for, along with having that the President Obama actually signed into law, allowing you to bring guns into national parks.
30 seconds. The NRA, as you mentioned, is going to hold a news conference tomorrow. Are you expecting anything in particular?
I'm expecting them to talk about prayers for the victims and not doing anything knee-jerk. I'm expecting rhetoric about conciliation, but not any kind of legislation that would be a compromise.
Richard Dunham, Washington correspondent for the Houston Chronicle and the Hearst newspapers, which includes papers right in the Newtown area. Thank you very much for coming on and talking about the culture clash and the Washington politics.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, the politics of the Columbus Avenue bike lane. Stay with us.